Chapter 10. At Endriago, Lord Domiel gifted him a new destrier to replace the one he had lost to the lion. Having spent a week of much-needed rest at the settlement in order to give his ribs and shoulder enough time to begin healing, Zahariel had eagerly begun his journey home as soon as the joyously happy citizens had let him and he was able to move without agonizing pain flaring in his ribs. Given the fact that he was repeating an earlier journey, albeit from the opposite direction, he knew which paths to take, and he managed to complete his journey to the Order's Fortress Monastery much more quickly than he would have expected. 38 days after leaving Endriago, he could already see the towers of Alderuk in the distance. By the 39th day, he was at the gates. The last part of the journey would always seem the most significant to him. As he came closer to the fortress, a sense of joyous expectation rose within him as he thought about what it would be like to see Nemiel and the rest of his friends again. Granted, he still had to face the Order's examiners and have his achievement verified, but with the lion's head he expected no problem. Zahariel anticipated his homecoming warmly, expecting a heartfelt welcome from his friends, all the more so because almost everyone he knew had thought he would most likely die on the quest. Naturally, he could not fully comprehend what that meant. Life seemed wonderful to him. It was made all the sweeter because of the relative hardships of his recent ordeal. He had faced one of the worst beasts Caliban could produce, and he had survived. He wanted to celebrate that feeling with his friends. He could not know how sorrowfully they had spent the week since he had left Alderuk. His friends had thought him dead. They had grieved for him. In their minds, they had all but buried him. The fact that he had survived, despite all the fears for his safety, would lend Zahariel an extra glow of heroism in the eyes of many of his contemporaries, especially those who had been supplicants with him in the Order. At the time of his return to Alderuk, though, he did not realize these things.
"We all thought you were dead," said Atias eagerly.
The younger lad held a box containing Zahariel's few meagre personal possessions, trailing excitedly after him as he carried his bedroll down the corridor.
"Everyone did. They all thought the beast must have killed you. There was even talk of having a funeral ceremony for you. That would have been funny, wouldn't it? Imagine if you rode back only to find out we'd already carved your name on one of the memorial tablets in the catacombs."
It was late afternoon on the first day after his return to Alderuk. A few hours earlier, Zahariel had entered through the great gates of the fortress to be met by cheering and the stamping of feet. Apparently, word of his impending arrival had already come down from the lookouts, for when the gates opened, it seemed as if the entire population of Alderuk was waiting to greet him. As Zahariel rode into the courtyard, he saw knights, supplicants, and seneschals all rejoicing at his safe return. The noise of their welcome had been deafening. It was a moment he would always keep with him. The end of his first great adventure, a moment of profound homecoming, when he finally felt accepted as an equal among the ranks of the Order. Nemiel had been waiting for him when he arrived. He was the first to greet Zahariel, grabbing him in a great bear hug. Nemiel had talked to him, his mouth working at a frantic pace, but his words were lost to the sound of the crowd. Afterwards, once the excitement had quietened down and Zahariel had reported to the gatekeeper as was expected, he was given a time at which he should present himself to the Order's examiners. In the meantime, he had been ordered to move out of the supplicants' barracks. Half a dozen sleeping rooms were reserved in a little visited corner of the fortress for those who had completed their quests, but had not yet been officially raised to the status of knights. "So, this is it," said Zahariel as he pushed open the door to his new room and looked inside. The room was empty. In keeping with the Order's monastic traditions, it was little more than a Spartan cell. There was a cot in the corner for him to sleep on, but other than that there were no furnishings, not even a chair.
"I don't suppose they expect you to be here long," jabbered Atias beside him.
Zahariel smiled indulgently, knowing that Master Ramiel was pleased with the boy's progress.
"You're so lucky," Atias muttered.
The boy said the words quietly, almost whispering.
"Lucky," said Zahariel. He indicated the room around them. "I take it you're going blind, or haven't you noticed our fine surroundings? You've seen my new room, Atias, and yet you call me lucky?"
"I wasn't talking about the room," replied Atias.
Growing tired of holding the box, Atias lowered it to the cell's floor.
"I mean you got to hunt one of the great beasts. You got to finish your quest of knighthood. I'm happy for you, really I am. You deserve it. You'll be Tsar, Zahariel. You'll fight wars and battles with the best of the Order's knights, alongside heroes like the Lion and Tsar Luther. You'll make Master Ramiel proud. You'll be a knight.
And so will you, little one, said Zahariel. I know it seems a long time away, but it won't be long before you're given your own quest. A couple of years, that's all it is. Follow your lessons, practice assiduously, and it'll be here almost before you know it.
That's just it, Attias shook his head. By the time I'm old enough, things will have changed. The Order's campaign against the great beasts will be over by then. There won't be any left. And without the great beasts, there won't be any more quests. There won't be any way to become a knight. You've done something I'll never be able to do, Zahariel. You've hunted one of the great beasts. I'll never get that chance.
As he spoke, Attias wore an expression of wistful sadness that was almost heartbreaking on the face of one so young. Attias saw a world in which there was no longer any way for a man to ascend to knighthood. Instinctively, Zahariel rejected that bleak vision. He was an optimist and an idealist to the core of his soul. When he looked at the Order's campaign against the beasts, he lauded its achievements. He was sure the future could only hold the things that Luther and the Lion had promised the people of Caliban before they began their campaign. When he looked to the future, he saw peace and prosperity on the horizon. He saw an end to fear. He saw an end to suffering and want. He saw a better tomorrow. When Zahariel looked to the future, he always saw the best of all possible worlds. It was his curse. "You are looking at these things too darkly, my friend," said Zahariel. He smiled at the boy to reassure him. "I know every day people talk about the campaign nearly being over, but I suspect it may well last for a good while longer. Certainly, if the monster I fought is any kind of guide, I doubt the great beasts are about to give up and die. They will fight tooth and nail to survive, just as they always have. So I wouldn't worry too much, Attias. You've still got time to kill your beast, and you've got plenty of time left to become a knight." There was a slit window at the other end of the room, looking out across the treetops of the forest. Zahariel found his eyes drawn to it. As had so often happened in the past, he briefly wondered at the dual nature of their world. From a distance, the forests were beautiful in a grim and forbidding way, yet inside those same picturesque woodlands lived creatures that were the stuff of human nightmares, creatures like the one he had killed. Zahariel loved Caliban, but he was not blind to its horrors. At times it seemed as though they lived on a planet that was both hell and paradise simultaneously. Yet the bond he felt towards his home and its forests was stronger and more powerful than almost anything else in his life. He loved his world unconditionally, whatever its flaws. "Do you know why people sometimes call this fortress the Rock?" he asked suddenly. The view from the window and the sight of the forest so far below them had inspired him. He wanted to share his insight with Attias, to coax the boy from his sorrows.
"It is because the name of the fortress is Alderuk," answered Attias. "It means Rock of Eternity in one of the old dialects. Master Ramiel said that it was originally the name of the mountain we're standing on. Then, when the Order's founders decided to build a fortress monastery at this site, they chose to use the name of the mountain for the fortress as well."
"That's one reason," Zahariel said. "But there's another as well. Think about the name, Alderuk, the Rock of Eternity. The Order has other fortress monasteries, but this was the first. It is our spiritual home and the seat of all our endeavours. So the founders gave it a name that mattered, a name that summed up exactly what they were trying to build here. This place is our rock, Attias. It is our foundation stone. As long as it endures, then some part of our ideals will always be alive. You understand what I'm trying to tell you?"
"I think so," nodded Attias, his face screwed up in an expression of concentration. "You are saying that even after the beasts are gone, the Order will still be here, and there will still be knights."
"Exactly," Zahariel agreed. "So you see, there is no reason for you to look so sad. If it puts your mind at ease, look at it this way. It is our duty to protect people from the creatures that live in the forests. Even once the beasts are gone, that duty will not change. This is Caliban. There will always be monsters here." Master Ramiel was one of the first to congratulate him on becoming a knight. His former tutor clearly wanted to say more, but he was swallowed up by the throng of knights closing in from all sides to welcome Zahariel to the order. In contrast to the solemnity of the ceremony to induct him to the order many years ago, his ascension to knighthood was marked by sudden pandemonium. It was a great moment in any man's life to ascend to knighthood, a moment that each of the men present had known and shared. They swept forward en masse to accept the latest newcomer to their ranks. Beneath the hooded surplices, Zahariel saw friendly and joyful faces. Before he knew what was happening, he was grabbed by a number of the closest men to him. Confused, Zahariel felt them hoist him off his feet. Suddenly, through the action of a dozen knights in unison, Zahariel's body was tossed into the air. He rose to above the level of their shoulders before falling back to be caught in the hands of the same men who had thrown him. He heard people laughing as they threw him up into the air again. His body tumbling in midair, Zahariel saw skewed kaleidoscope images of the faces of the men around him. They were all laughing. He knew some of them personally, but many were men who had only been stern and distant figures in his life. He saw the Lion, Luther, Lord Cypher, and Master Ramiel. All of them were either smiling or laughing. Of all the sights he would see in his life, that one image would stay with him as the strangest and most improbable.
"It is a tradition," Luther said to him, laughing as they shared a goblet of wine later. "The springboard, I mean. It is something we do for all the new men. Ah, but your face, that was the best part."
They were in the main dining hall at Alderook. Much to Zahariel's relief, his fellow knights had reverted to more prosaic methods of marking his initiation once they had finished throwing him back and forth into the air like a rag doll. A feast had been held in his honour, in which numerous celebratory toasts and words of congratulation had come his way. Knights he had only ever seen before from afar had solemnly clasped his arm and called him their brother. Zahariel did not know whether it was because they respected his achievement in killing the Beast of Endriago, or simply that they treated all new knights in a similar fashion. Either way, he had found the reaction to his ascension to knighthood almost overwhelming. It was a moving experience, made all the more memorable by the company he was keeping. Once the meal was over and the gathering had begun to mingle and separate into smaller groups, Luther had made a special effort to seek him out. Evidently, he thought it important that Zahariel should properly enjoy the celebrations.
"Yes, your face," said Luther, still laughing.
Sir Luther had a good humour to him that immediately put Zahariel at ease.
"Really, it's a shame you couldn't see it for yourself. At first, when you were grabbed, you looked like you thought they were going to kill you. Then, when you realized what was really going on, I swear you looked even more frightened. At one stage, I thought you were about to piss your robes. Probably a good thing you didn't, though, considering you were in mid-air at the time."
"It was just... it caught me by surprise," said Zahariel. "I didn't think..."
"What? That we'd have a sense of humour?" chuckled Luther.
He put a hand to his eyes as though wiping away tears of laughter.
"No, well, people don't. That's what makes it so funny. By the way, you know I wasn't joking when I called it a tradition. Granted, it's not the kind you'd hear tell about from your masters or from Lord Cypher, but in many ways the business of throwing the new initiate into the air like that is as much a tradition as anything else we've put you through over the years. We call it the invisible springboard. Think of it as an antidote to the dour seriousness of the initiation ceremony. It's how we welcome you to the family."
"The family?
The order," explained Luther. "Do you remember what Lord Cypher said during your first initiation ceremony? We are brothers, every one of us, and brothers don't spend all their time sitting around looking po-faced or bemoaning the hardships of the world. Sometimes we need to blow off steam. We laugh, we joke, we play pranks on each other. We do the things real brothers do. Look around this room, Zahariel. Any man in here would be willing to die for you, and they'd expect you to be willing to do the same for them. Caliban is a dangerous place, and any of us could be called upon to make the ultimate sacrifice for his brothers. That doesn't mean we can't all laugh together at times. It helps to keep us sane. We all like a joke."
"Even him?" Zahariel asked, glancing over at Lionel Johnson, standing head and shoulders above the other knights around him. There was a brooding sense of aloofness about the lion that seemed more pronounced when he was seen from a distance. Zahariel remembered the conversation he had passed with the lion atop the fortress tower, and the sense of isolation was curiously more palpable when the lion was surrounded by people.
"No, you have me there," Luther said. "My brother is a man alone. It has always been that way with him. It is not that he lacks a sense of humour. If anything, the reverse is true. You must remember that he is as much a genius as he is a great warrior. His mind is a subtle and complex instrument, and his humour is shaped by the same brilliance he exhibits in everything else he does. When my brother makes jokes, no one understands them. He tends to pitch them too high for us roughhouse types. They go over our heads."
A look of sadness briefly passed over Luther's face as he gazed at the lion. Spotting it, Zahariel felt as if he had inadvertently intruded into a private sorrow. It made him more acutely aware of the strength of the bond between the lion and Luther, an emotional attachment that reminded him of his bond with Nemiel. It was clear that Luther was a remarkable man, perhaps more so even than most people gave him credit for. He possessed phenomenal talent in a number of fields, not least as a leader, a warrior, and a huntsman. With the exception of Lionel Johnson, Luther had completed quests against more great beasts than any man in Caliban's history. In any other era, Luther would probably have been acclaimed as the greatest hero of his age. He was a tireless champion of the people of Caliban, marked out as much by his inner qualities of humour and cool thoughtfulness in times of crisis as he was by the valour of his deeds. It had been Luther's tragedy to be born in the same era as a man against whom all his endeavours would be judged and forever found wanting in comparison. From the day he had encountered Johnson in the forest and decided to bring him to civilization, Luther had sounded the death knell of his own legend. From that point on, he had been condemned to live in the lion's shadow. To Zahariel's mind, it spoke even more highly of Luther that his affection for the lion seemed genuine and unforced. Many a man in his situation might have been tempted to succumb to jealousy and begun to resent Johnson's achievements. Not Luther. He was not of that ilk. With true brotherly devotion, he had turned all his energies to ensuring that the lion's schemes met with every success. Luther was as much responsible for the campaign against the great beasts as Johnson. But as the campaign drew to a close, it was not Luther who was receiving all the plaudits, but Johnson. Zahariel could sense no bitterness in the man, for Luther had evidently accepted that his role in history was to be the bridesmaid to his brother's triumphs. "My brother is a gifted man," said Luther, his eyes still on the lion. "I suspect there has never been any other man like him. Certainly no one alive today can match the range of his accomplishments. Did you know he is an excellent mimic?"
"The lion? No, I didn't know that."
"He can imitate the sound of any animal on Caliban, from the hunting cry of a raptor to the mating call of a syrinx. He also has a wonderful singing voice. He knows all the old songs, the folk melodies of Caliban. If you heard him sing Forests of My Fathers, it would bring tears to your eyes, I promise you. As far as I know, he has never tried to create original musical works of his own, but you can be sure if he did, the results would be inspiring. My brother excels at whatever he turns his hands to. That is his tragedy."
"His tragedy?" asked Zahariel, wrong-footed for a moment. How is it a tragedy to be good at everything?"
"Perhaps tragedy is too strong a word for it," Luther shrugged as he turned back towards Zahariel.
"But you must remember that my brother is unique. He never speaks of his origins. They are as much a source of mystery to him as they are to everyone else. One might almost think of him as some god or demigod fallen to earth rather than a man born of woman like the rest of us. My brother is set apart through no fault of his own. His intelligence is so dazzling, so extraordinary, that there are times when even I cannot follow his line of reasoning. And I have known him for years, long enough to grow accustomed to his thought processes."
"Think how boring it must be for him," continued Luther.
"Don't misunderstand me. My brother loves Caliban, and he loves the Order. But sometimes it must feel to him like he is a giant in a land of pygmies, both physically and mentally. Lord Cypher says that intellectual stimulation is based on the free discourse of ideas between equals. But my brother has no equals, not on Caliban. Here, in the Order, we give him an outlet for his energies. We give him camaraderie and a sense of purpose. We give him our devotion. We would follow him unto death. But these things are not enough in a man's life. Even surrounded by friends and followers on all sides, my brother is still lonely. There is no one on Caliban like him. He is the loneliest man in the world.
I never thought of it that way before, said Zahariel.
You probably shouldn't think of it again, said Luther with a shake of his head. He raised the wine goblet in his hand and sniffed at it in mock appraisal. Listen to me. It is a celebration, and somehow I manage to make it mournful. I shall have to have words with the Order's Master Vintner about the wines he serves at these functions. This one certainly inclines men to pensiveness when they should be jolly. To compound its flaws, it also leaves behind a vinegary aftertaste. And to think when I came over here to talk to you, my only intention was to apologize for playing the devil.
Playing the devil?
When you first joined the Order, and you were originally initiated, said Luther. It is part of the ritual. You are asked questions by three different interrogators. One of the interrogators is given the task of trying to undermine and belittle the candidate for knighthood. He is expected to find fault with anything the candidate may decide to say or do. The negative interrogator is called the devil. It's all symbolic, of course, based on some old superstition. Lord Cypher could probably tell you more about it. I just wanted you to know that there was nothing personal in the fact that I play the devil at your ceremony. It is a ritual role, that's all. It is chosen by lots, so it was sheer chance that I happened to be called upon to do it. I never had any doubts about your abilities. I suspect you will go on to be one of our best and brightest.
Luther extended a hand to clasp Zahariel's forearm just below the elbow, and Zahariel did likewise. It was a traditional gesture of friendship on Caliban.
I congratulate you, Sir Zahariel, he said, gazing over Zahariel's shoulder at the knights around them. I suppose I should take a stroll around the room. There are several other knights I need to see.
Luther turned away, only to glance back at Zahariel before he went.
Oh, and Zahariel, if you ever need advice, you know where to come. Feel free to call on me at any time. If you have a problem, I will always listen.
Nemiel had already spoken to Zahariel that night, as had Master Ramiel. Nemiel seemed thrilled that his cousin had finally become one of the Order's knights. Having no great head for alcohol, Zahariel had sipped sparingly at his wine, but Nemiel had indulged his thirst more liberally. Apparently, while Zahariel had hunted the beast of Endriago, Nemiel had requested a beast hunt of his own. As if to prove that their competitive games were as alive as ever, Nemiel had returned to Alderuk barely a week before Zahariel. He was slurring his words by the time they were able to have a proper conversation, his friend holding forth with grandiose visions of both their futures.
"You've made your mark already, cousin,"
said Nemiel, breathing out wine fumes as he swayed unsteadily on his feet.
"We both have. We've proved we've got what it takes. This is only the beginning. One day we'll rise as high in the Order as it's possible to go. We'll be like the Lion and Luther, you and me. We are brothers in all of this, and we will remake our world together."
Master Ramiel had been more circumspect. As ever, Zahariel found it difficult to read his master's face. After Nemiel had staggered away to slump into a nearby chair and fall asleep, Ramiel had come to offer further congratulations to his former student.
"Sir Zahariel," his master said, "it has a pleasing ring to it. Remember, though, it is when a man has been made a knight that the hard work begins. Until this point you were only a boy who wanted to be a knight and a man. Now you will learn just how heavy both those burdens can be."
Ramiel said nothing more and excused himself, leaving Zahariel to ponder the meaning of his words. Zahariel wondered what his mentor had meant, recognizing a sense of restlessness within him, something different from any subtle disquiet his master's words had caused him. Having devoted so many of his energies for so long towards becoming a knight, he felt a rumbling sense of discontent, a feeling of being incomplete. He had achieved the ambition of his boyhood.
What new ambition would he find to guide his life? Later in the evening, Zahariel found himself in conversation with Lord Cypher, the old man similarly in his cups and waxing lyrical on the subject of the various ranks and positions within the order. What had begun as a conversation on the solemn vows he would go on to swear as a knight had evolved, largely by the artifice of Lord Cypher, into a discussion of the upper hierarchy of the order and his position within it.
"Of course, that is why some think Ramiel will be made the new Lord Cypher when Johnson ascends to become Grand Master."
"I thought it was only rumour," said Zahariel. "About the lion being made Grand Master, I mean. I didn't think it had been confirmed."
"Eh?"
said Lord Cypher, staring blankly at him in confusion. Eventually, after a pause of a few seconds, understanding dawned on his face.
"Ah, I may have been too loose with my secrets, really. An unforgivable mistake for a man in my position."
Lord Cypher sighed.
"I must be getting older than I thought. Still, there's no making a young man forget something once he's heard it. Yes, you're right. It hasn't been confirmed, but the decision has been made. We just haven't announced it yet. Johnson will be the new Grand Master, and Luther will be his second in command. As for me, I shall be retiring from my duties in a couple of days. Then it will be down to Johnson to choose my successor. Really, I have no idea who he'll pick, but Master Ramiel would be a good candidate, don't you think?"
"Very much so," nodded Zahariel. "I think he'd make a fine Lord Cypher."
"Yes, he would. That opinion is for your ears only, Zahariel, as is everything else I have just said. Don't compound the dual faults of an old man's memory and a slip of the tongue by telling everyone about it. It would only embarrass me and make the Order's hierarchy think they should have got rid of me a long time ago. Can I rely on your good intentions in this?"
"Absolutely. You have my word that I will never repeat this conversation to anyone."
"Excellent," said Lord Cypher. "I am glad to see you understand the value of discretion."
He gazed around for long seconds, his failing eyes taking in the scene of knights enjoying wine and conversation with each other. Then, without warning, the Lord Cypher turned away to leave the gathering. Unaccountably, Zahariel was put in mind of an old bear shuffling into the forest to die.
"The Order is in good hands," said Lord Cypher, offering the words as a parting shot over his shoulder as he moved away. "Between men like Johnson, Luther, Master Ramiel, and even youngsters like you, I am confident it will continue to thrive in the decades ahead. I doubt I will live to see it, but I am content all the same. It is time for one generation to give way to the next, as is the way of things. I have no fear for the future."
It was the last time Zahariel would ever speak to the man who had been Lord Cypher at the time he joined the Order. For that matter, it was the last time he would ever see him. In a few days' time, a quest would be declared against another beast in the North Wilds in the vicinity of a settlement named Braydin. Having retired from his duties, the ex-Lord Cypher would petition the Order's hierarchy to be allowed to take on the quest. They would accede to his request, and the old man would ride quietly from Alderrook early one morning while most of the fortress was still sleeping. He would never be seen again. Some would claim the beast he was hunting had killed him. Others would say he had more likely been brought down by a pack of raptors before reaching the North Wilds. The truth would never be known, but in the wake of his disappearance, a place of honour would be set aside for him in the catacombs beneath Alderrook. It was a small space, a rocky shelf no more than a third of a metre wide and half a metre tall, large enough to hold an urn full of ashes or some of the old man's bones if his body were ever found. His name would also be carved into the rock by the Order's stonemasons. This was the shape of days to come. Zahariel could not know what would happen in the future any more than he could know he would never see the Lord Cypher, or rather this particular Lord Cypher, again. Another individual would wear that title in the Order, and his true character would always be a mystery. It was all a matter of the future. For the moment, as the Knights of the Order drank and celebrated together, the only thing left to complete Zahariel's ascension to knighthood was to have his status confirmed by the Lion.
"It has been
"A momentous night for both of us," said Lionel Johnson.
"You have become a knight, and I have learned I am about to become its new Grand Master."
"Our Grand Master?" asked Zahariel, mindful of the promise he had made to Lord Cypher earlier, and shocked that Johnson would even consider mentioning such a thing to him when the news was not yet common currency. Zahariel was lost for words.
Congratulations.
"Don't act so surprised, Zahariel," said Johnson. His tone was neither chiding nor unkind as he steered Zahariel away from the gathered knights towards a secluded corner of the great hall. Firelight and shadows played across the great warrior's face, and Zahariel realized with a start that he doubted whether he had ever seen the lion in daylight or without the refuge of shadows close by. The revelries were dying down as the wine did its work, and as the lion approached him, Zahariel knew his part in the festivities was almost concluded.
"Let's not pretend you don't know it already," said the lion. "I couldn't help but catch some of your conversation with Lord Cypher earlier. I wasn't trying to eavesdrop, but my senses are sharp, especially my hearing, almost preternaturally so. I heard Lord Cypher's slip of the tongue. I know that you know I am to be made Grand Master."
"I am sorry," said Zahariel, bowing his head. "My finding out about it was entirely accidental. I assure you I won't repeat it to any—"
"It's all right, Zahariel,"
said Johnson, holding a hand up to silence him.
"I trust your discretion, and I realize you are in no way at fault. Besides which, it is already the worst-kept secret on Caliban. People tend to forget how good my hearing is. I have heard my impending promotion discussed by at least 36 different people in the last few days, all when they think I'm out of earshot."
"Then may I offer you my congratulations, my lord," said Zahariel.
"You may," smiled the lion, "and they are gratefully accepted, though in practical terms my new role will make little difference to my life."
"You are Grand Master of the Order," said Zahariel. "That must feel important."
"Oh, I grant you I'm proud to lead you all, but such was my role beforehand, though I did not have the title for it. How about you? Do you feel any different now that you are a knight?"
"Of course."
"How so?"
For a moment Zahariel was flustered, not quite knowing how he felt.
"Honored? Proud of my achievements? Accepted?"
"And all of these are good things,"
nodded the lion.
"But you are just the same, Zahariel. You are still the same person you were before you killed the lion. You have crossed a line, but it does not change who you are. Don't forget that. A man may be dressed up in all manner of fancy titles, but he must not let it change him, or else ego, pride, and ambition will be his undoing. No matter what grand title is bestowed upon you, to thine own self be true, Zahariel. Do you understand?"
"I think so, my lord," said Zahariel.
"I hope that you do," said the lion. "It is an easy thing to forget, for all of us."
The lion then leaned conspiratorially close and said,
"Did you know we two now share a brotherhood shared by no others on Caliban?"
"We do?" said Zahariel, surprised and flattered. "What brotherhood?"
"We are the only warriors ever to kill a Calibanite lion. All others who tried are dead. One day you must tell me how you killed it."
Zahariel felt a justifiable swell of pride and fraternity as the import of his killing the beast sank in. The tale of how Lord Johnson had slain a Calibanite lion was well known and was commemorated upon one of the windows of the Circle Chamber, but until now it had not occurred to him that he had survived an encounter with so unique a beast.
"I am honoured to share that brotherhood, my lord," said Zahariel, bowing his head.
"It is one that will only ever comprise of you and I, Zahariel," said the lion. "There are no others of their kind on Caliban. The great beasts are almost extinct, and there will be no others like them on our world ever again. Part of me thinks I should be sad about that. After all, extinction is such a final solution, don't you think?"
They are beasts that exist only to kill. Why should we not exterminate them? They would do the same to us, were it not for the knightly orders.
True. But do they do it because they are evil, or because it is the way they were made?
Zahariel fought back to the beasts he had fought and said, I do not know if they were evil as such, but each time I have faced one, I have seen something in its eyes, some desire to kill that is more than simply animal hunger. Something in the beasts is wrong.
Then you are perceptive, Zahariel, said the lion. There is something wrong with the beasts. I don't know what it is, but they are not just some other race of beasts, like horses or foxes or humans. They are aberrations, twisted mistakes, wrought from some early form that has not yet had the good grace to die out on its own. Can you imagine what it must be like to be so singular a creature? To go through life knowing, even on some animal instinctual level, that you are alone and that there will never be any more of you? Think how maddening that must be. The beasts were not just driven by hunger, they were insane, driven to madness by their very uniqueness. Trust me, Zahariel, we are doing them a favour by destroying them all.
Zahariel nodded and sipped his wine, too caught up with the lion's words to dare to interrupt him. A strange melancholy had crept into his leader's words, as though he was recalling a distant memory that flitted just beyond the reach of recall. Then suddenly it was gone, as though the lion realized he had spoken unguardedly.
Of course, there will be some who are upset that you killed the last of the lions, said Johnson. Luther, for one.
Sir Luther? How so? Lord Johnson laughed.
He always wanted to kill a lion. Now, he'll never get the chance.
As parties went, it had been a fine one. Zahariel had enjoyed the company of the other knights. He had enjoyed the feeling that he could look at these men as his peers, and with it came a feeling of inclusion, of acceptance. Following his talk with Lionel Johnson, Zahariel had returned to his fellow knights, where the talk had turned to the war against the Knights of Lupus. All agreed that the war was in its final stages, and that the final destruction of the rebellious order would be complete in the very near future. He had enjoyed good food and wine, and he had enjoyed the expression in Master Ramiel's eyes, the one that said he had made his teacher proud. Most of all, he had enjoyed the moment, for he knew that such triumphs were rare in a man's life. They must be handled with care, and then put away as memories for the future.